Tales of the Deimos, Story 4, Sarah's Blessing. They say Sarah Wheeler wasn't a happy woman, but the details are vague about why. There's no debate that it was her marriage that made her unhappy, but how severe her husband's mistreatment of her, making her so miserable, actually was, is not an easy thing to figure. Most people don't think about it too much. I never did. But Joe thought about it a lot. He didn't care much for Sarah Wheeler, and that made him question her motives as well as her veracity. He's actually the first person I ever met who flat out doesn't believe Sarah Wheeler was abused as a wife, and he's headstrong about it. He says there's no way to know, and since ain't nobody standing up for poor Mr. Wheeler, I'm going to be the one to do it. That man's been out in the cold long enough. Joe's right about one thing. There's not a sure way to get the factual story of Sarah's life at this late date. After all, she's been dead at least 200 years, and, as Joe is quick to remind anyone who brings up the subject, you'll only get one side of the story if you ask her. Her husband can't defend himself. He isn't hanging about fraternizing with the living. It seems he got on with death, and it looks like he's taking care of whatever business in the beyond a soul is supposed to take care of after the body is thrown into the pit. It's only Sarah stuck around to meddle in the affairs of the living after she's dead, when she should be gone herself. I guess you can see that Joe doesn't like Sarah much, and he feels a good deal of pity for the husband who's been maligned all these years, a man whose given name we don't even remember. Let me tell you about the legend before I start my story, just in case you aren't familiar, and then I'll tell you our experience with Sarah, our story. After that, you can make up your own mind about the subject. Deep in the Deimos Hills, there's a valley with a little brook running through it. Beside that brook are the stony ruins of a cottage. This, everyone pretty much agrees, was the home of the living Sarah Wheeler. According to legend, she was brought there as a bride, lived and died there, and is still haunting the place to this day. The fields around the house have been abandoned. Every once in a while, a sturdy youth in the vicinity will try to prove up the land as a squatter, but, as far as I've ever heard, none of these hopeful boys have lasted very long. Joe will tell you, she's not an easy woman to live with, and that's a fact borne out through repeated experiment. But Sarah is well-liked by many a woman. It's said, and I've heard repeated testimony to prove it up, that if you and your prospective groom go stand at Sarah's threshold on the night of a full moon and wait for her, she might appear and foretell for you your chances of a happy life. I've known dozens of women who've gone to see her, and of those, 2 or 3 were actually blessed with visitation. Sarah, they told me, appeared to them and smiled as if she was inviting them into her home as welcome guests. These women were relieved because, if Sarah greets you with open arms and a smiling face, you will have a long and pleasant life with the man who is with you. But sometimes she doesn't greet you so kindly. If she flies at you in terrifying anger, you might as well break it off with the fellow. Either he'll be as bad or worse to you than her husband was to her, or maybe the two of you just aren't right for each other in some way or another. Most everyone who lives in our county has been to the threshold of Sarah's abandoned ruin of a house on the full moon at least once in their lives. My own mother went with my father, but they didn't see Sarah. My mother took this to mean that they stood as good a chance as anyone else for happiness, but there wasn't any certainty about it. She figured that Dad was worth taking a chance on, and she'll tell you today if you ask her that the bet paid off. He's been a loving husband and a doting father for the past 51 years, give or take, and I imagine that'll continue until death takes one of them. They had 7 children together. I'm the youngest of those children. My sisters all went to see Sarah, too, in their turns, and my brothers were pretty much dragged there by any girl who was even a smidgen serious about them. They were handsome boys, and popular, my brothers. None of my sisters or my brothers saw Sarah, but like my mother, they eventually got married anyway, and they've had their shares of joys and sorrows. I remember how Joe laughed when I suggested that we stand at Sarah's threshold together. He was pleased because I wasn't the kind of girl who took every boy she met to Sarah's house. I'm sure he'd been suspicious, but he knew then, when I'd said it, that I was willing to spend my days with him, and he was crazy about me. I'd never been to see Sarah with anyone before, and I wanted so badly for Joe and me to see her. I'm a superstitious woman, and I'd been a superstitious girl, I admit it. You can't grow up in the Deimos Hills without touching things that don't seem part of the world we were born into. You can sense something about some hazy other world where maybe we can't pace out the distance with our stride or move earth and stone and lumber to set these in line with our plumbobs. The Deimos lets you catch a glimpse or two of a world you can't measure or level out, another world. Sarah is part of that otherness, and I wanted her to give her blessing to me and Joe. I wanted it bad. I knew, like I said, a few women who had seen Sarah, and I'd heard stories about others who'd seen her. Old man Kronkis, they say, went there in his youth with one maid, and then later with another. Both these girls saw Sarah fly at them like a banshee from the depths, and they ran screaming from the valley up to the road. They say that Kronkis followed them and tried to comfort them, but after Sarah had revealed his true nature, they were more afraid of him than they were of Sarah. They tell me that those girls were probably saved by Sarah from a fate worse than death. You can't really argue with that. Old man Kronkis is as mean as they come, even if he is rich as a king, and all that money wouldn't mean a thing if the life you lived to spend it was a cruel one. It was a cool night in late November when Joe and I went. I remember that we held hands standing on the threshold. The house is a pile of stone in ruin, and I remember thinking that it was small. Houses today are much larger than houses were then. The moon had risen, and I leaned on Joe's shoulder. He had strong shoulders, and I was so content and happy we waited together. The thing that I remember most about when we saw Sarah was that there was so little warning. One minute the night was peaceful, and everything was like a dream, and the next minute she rose up from the floor as if she were being pulled by a string from the skies above, and she flew at us. Her face was contorted like a woman whose labor is upon her. She screamed words I didn't understand. They were contorted, meaningless sounds, and her figure was contorted, too, into something that was wrong, like a building thrown off its foundation and lying askew against a hillside. I was so shocked that I just stood, still as stone. I didn't run as the women who had hoped to marry Kronkis had run. I just stood there, and it was Joe who took me by the shoulders, turned me round, and led me up toward the road. We didn't say a word to each other. We just walked toward home in silence. It was a 40-minute walk. The silence lasted all those long minutes. I remember that I cried a little, and Joe fished in his pocket to find a handkerchief. Once we reached my parents' porch, I had to face the finality that because Joe and I would be miserable together, maybe I'd never get to walk down a road in the dark with him again. I turned to him then, and I could see him quite clearly because my mother had left a lamp in the window to light the porch, and, of course, the moon was full. His eyes were sad. I could almost feel his sadness like something solid in the darkness through his eyes. It was so strong, and I'd never been so unhappy before in all my life. "Well," he'd said to me, and that was all he said. The word hung on the air in the moonlight. It sounded a little like a question. And I knew my own mind pretty well at that moment. I won't deny that there have been times in my life when I've had a regret or two, but all in all, I'm glad for the words I spoke then. "Well," I repeated his word, "I guess we won't invite her to the wedding." And Joe laughed until tears ran down his cheeks. Then he took me in his arms and he kissed me. We were married later that month, and we've lived as happily ever after as most married couples, in spite of Sarah's warning.